Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
Winning isn't everything. He wouldn't know. He's never lost. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Well, hello. It's Thursday, February 11th, 2016. This is Primetime Sports. We are coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks, the nation's most listened to sports talk show. I'm Bob McCowan. That there is Michael Grange right there. A little bit later on, Craig Sager will join us of the NBA on TNT. Carl Markham of the Press Association. What's the Press Association? Oh, that's... This is the Liverpool story. That's great. So they announced they're going to raise tickets. Bunch of fans walk out, and now they change their minds. Never mind. We won't raise them. Be the same. We'll talk to them about that. Don Van Natta Jr. of ESPN and Outside the Lines will join us. Glenn Healy of NHL and Sportsnet and some other people as well. Terrell Owens was supposed to be on the show today in studio. So, he's got some kind of charity deal.
Oh, so he's not?
No.
You say supposed to, like past tense.
He's not coming.
Oh, that's fine. You know, that kind of thing doesn't bother you.
Well, no, not really. I didn't understand why he was on anyway. It's NBA weekend.
I mean, when football player says he'll come on and...
I'm not much on athletes. I don't mind former athletes if they're interesting. I don't know if Terrell Owens is interesting or not. I mean, he was a character...
I think
during his career,
in a weird, quirky,
in a jerk sort of way. In a what an a-hole kind of way. That's what he was.
So he could either be an a-hole and that's be interesting, or he could be one of those guys who actually, when you actually take the time to speak,
well, you never know.
He's not, which would be interesting.
You never know, but now we're not going to find out because he. So after calling us. And asking to be on, obviously because he has something to promote. And we said, all right. And he cancels 1 hour before the show. And then they asked him if he wanted to come on tomorrow. Well, we don't have a show with guests on Fridays. But that's what these idiots do. Big name, they get all excited. And they said no to that too. And apparently, the interesting part about T.O., I did a little homework. He didn't get into Hall of Fame, right? So this year was a first-year eligible. Now, if you look statistically at his career, he probably deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, a bit of a monster, right?
Well, like, he's top...
Lots of yards, lots of touchdowns.
Top three, top four in all the big categories.
Lots of years.
Yeah. All kinds of things. He didn't get in. Why do you think he didn't get in?
Not the most popular.
Because he's an A. Oh. That's why. When you diss on people and when you are a jerk and then you want the same people that you've been crapping on your entire career to vote for you, guess what? Sometimes they go, I'm doing that. It's happened in baseball for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't follow the NFL. Hall of Fame is nearly as closely as I do the baseball.
It seems a lot of people get in the NFL Hall of Fame. Doesn't seem quite as exclusive.
Well, it's not as bad as hockey.
It's like if you can survive long enough to play 13 years in the NFL, then...
Did you get in? I don't know. I know the Hockey Hall of Fame has kept some people out because some people didn't like them.
Guy named Derek Lindros, maybe?
Well, that'd be one. I mean, can you explain why he's not in the Hall of Fame?
No.
No, I can't either. There have been other guys, too.
By the way, Eric Lindros, my experience with him was outstanding.
I got no issue with Eric Lindros.
I owe my career.
And I'll tell you what. He was the best player in the game by miles for a few years. By miles. No? Am I wrong?
He was one of a kind. Still hasn't been one quite like him.
May never be another guy like him. Could do everything. Everything. He'd wipe you out with a check, and he had soft hands, could score goals, set guys up. For a big guy, skated pretty well. He had everything. Everything.
Yeah.
You don't put him in the Hall of Fame? Why? Because he got concussed?
Knee
injury. You're punishing him?
Missed a lot of time.
Well, all right.
Didn't play a ton of games. But then you get, well, Forsberg, you know, played about the same number of games. Bure played about the same number of games. Well, I mean, it's, you know.
Why do we decide you have to play so many games?
It seems like an arbitrary line.
It is an arbitrary line. And I think when you create that arbitrary line, you have to accept that there's probably going to be a guy or two somewhere down the road that's going to push that line. That's going to say, you know, I was good enough. I didn't achieve your line here, but I was good enough when I was good that maybe you ought to reconsider. And for me, Lindros is that guy.
Yeah. And I mean, it's worth pointing out, it wasn't like he's personally a bad person. I mean, I think it all stems from he tried to buck the system hockey-wise. And
you think that's what it is?
I don't know. I really don't know. I honestly don't know.
He was 18 years old when he did that.
And even younger when he tried to, I mean, he kind of did the same thing in junior, right? They didn't want to go play in the Sioux.
I think his parents did that.
Yeah, but as would I if I was in the same situation.
Well, yeah.
I would like to have my kid stay home when he's, or close to home when he's 16 or 17 years old.
But I mean, the guy's career, his career didn't collapse because of his inability to continue to play that way or to play at a high level. It's because of injuries, something you cannot control. Knee and concussion. Concussion ultimately was the end of it. And now you're going to hold that against a guy?
That seems to be it. Yeah.
Does that make any sense to you? I mean, I know it's got to be more than 1 year or 2 years. And I mean, you know, but I don't know where that line is.
Right. Well, it's that endless debate, right? Like you got Mike Gartner who scored 700 goals, played, you know, 20 something seasons, scored 30 goals almost every season. And was never, I don't think, he would probably tell you, there was never any given season when he was even maybe a top 10 player in the NHL. But he was really good for a long time, and he's a Hall of Famer. Whereas Eric Lindros, indisputably, was for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I don't know exactly the number, was, if not the best, one of the top three players in the NHL. So who was more impactful? Who had a better career? Who was a better, more deserving Hall of Fame candidate?
Well, in any event, T.O. is not in the Hall of Fame.
No.
I imagine he will get in, but he's just being punished for being a jerk, and now we know why.
Right. But I think
he had the reputation throughout his career.
Do you ever see him, doing the sit-ups in the driveway? He was epic.
All of that stuff was nonsense.
It was complete nonsense.
It was just look at me.
Totally.
And
he was an athlete made for Twitter before Twitter.
Yeah. I wonder what he's doing now, besides being involved in a charity basketball game. I guess the NFL doesn't want anything to do with him anymore.
But, well, he's always played in the celebrity game. And if I recall,
he must have a pal.
If I recall, he's really good. I think that's part of the catch is he shows up to the celebrity basketball game and he's like
and
dunking.
He can play.
He's like dunking on guys.
Oh, okay.
He's him and Randy Moss. I think Randy Moss actually played a little bit of
pro. Well, there's two pretty good wide receivers, right there. In any event. So is the NBA All-Star Game festivities, are they now on?
Yes and no. So the officially sanctioned NBA player availability, all that's tomorrow. The league, they're still playing tonight.
No, I get that.
But there are a lot of people in town. All the peripheral events, there are people in town. I'm going to, Masai Ujiri has his documentary, Giants of Africa. It makes its premiere tonight. That's going to be a well-attended NBA event.
Adam
Silver will be there. Steve Nash was doing an event downtown today.
Oh, another thing I didn't get invited
to. Yeah. So, there's stuff going on. And the thing with All-Star Weekend is, like, my phone, it's just I get email after email after email after email about events and availabilities and appearances, and it's kind of dizzying.
You know the only email I got about the All-Star game? I got an email saying, do you want to buy tickets to go and see Ludacris?
That seems strange to me, Bob. You think?
Well, I think that was ludicrous to ask me to pay to go and see somebody I don't even know.
Yeah. I don't think you're his demographic.
Well, why would they send me the email?
A mistake.
They'd probably send it to everybody.
Yeah. I didn't get that
But
one.
It wasn't a come and be our guest.
No.
It was a come and pay money, mm-hmm. buy a ticket. How come that's not sold out? Maybe he's not such a big star anymore.
No.
Was he ever a big star?
I think so.
Was he?
Yeah. I think you're being a star in rap. Comes and goes quickly.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
It's a fast-moving game.
Yeah.
Not that, you know.
Well, I wouldn't know if I bumped into him on the street.
He's been in some movies.
I still wouldn't know him if I bumped. Yeah. I saw they sent a picture.
Which is both kind of like the peak, your peak as a rapper, and kind of it's also maybe the beginning of the end. Is that you're big enough to be in a movie,
right.
And then after that, it sort of your career seems to go nowhere.
So other than being invited to spend money to go and see somebody I don't really care about, that's the only invitation I've had. So I may boycott the game itself. I may deliberately decide not to watch. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Now, do you want the truth? I wouldn't have gone to anything anyway, probably.
It'd be a pretty good event. I think you'd enjoy yourself, Bob.
I don't know. We'll talk about the Liverpool story in a bit. Don Van Natta Jr., Glenn Healy, among those who will join us. It has been a very, how to describe this, interesting last 12-16 months for our next guest. He is certainly well-known as a sideline reporter for the NBA on TNT. Craig Sager joins us on the phone. Craig, welcome to Toronto. How are you?
Well, thanks. I'm not in Toronto quite yet.
Oh, so not yet?
Where it's 78 degrees and sunny. Uh-oh. I got shorts on. And
attaboy.
Just got through going through my labs and got a blood transfusion to pump me up to get ready to go up there. And I'm on a golf course right now in shorts.
Attaboy.
Craig, do we want to break it to you? Have you been told what's waiting for you when you get here?
I heard it was going to be 6 or 8 below.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Been told right, Craig.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know whether you work in Fahrenheit or Celsius, but suffice to say, a lot colder than it was a week ago. We had 61 degrees Fahrenheit here a week ago, and it's going to be around 0 Fahrenheit when you arrive.
Since you snow on the ground?
A little bit, not much really. We had nothing until 2 days ago, and now just a dusting. It's you probably won't see any downtown.
Snow.
Yeah, it is right now. I'll tell you that. You talked about your health. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I feel great. Like I said, I'm over here at MD Anderson getting treatment 1 week a month. I have to go through a maintenance chemo. So that's what I'm doing now. And then when I leave Toronto, I'm going back for another clinical trial. So
go ahead.
Battling it.
You went through, speaking of clinical trials, you went through a clinical trial that had you doing chemo for 24 hours a day for 2 straight weeks. Is that accurate?
Yeah. That's it. It's called some numeral DFP. It hasn't been approved, obviously, by the FDA, but it was a clinical trial that they came up with, and I was the first one to get it who had 2 transplants. And it got me in remission, and it saved my life. So I was very fortunate that, MD Anderson was able to give it to me. And to be honest with you, when you're in chemo for 24 hours straight for 14 days, it's they tell you ahead of time, if you can survive this, if it doesn't kill you, you got a chance.
Wow.
And I survived the 14 days. I've handled chemo pretty well. I haven't had any first host with any of the stuff. I haven't had any bad side effects, nausea or vomiting or any of that. I've, you know, obviously, the usual, lose your hair. I've had that twice. But other than that, I felt pretty good. We're going to start on Monday. So I come back here and do that for 8 days.
I don't know if you can, Craig, I don't know if you can go to some place that's a little less windy or that's even possible, because it's almost impossible for us to hear you right now.
I'm sorry. Probably not. We're, like I said, I'm in Houston, and we're on top of a landfill.
Oh.
I can turn my body. Is that any better?
That is, yeah, that's better. Better. That's a lot better.
Okay.
I know a little bit about chemo, and I know that there are various levels of chemo that you can go through. Some is reasonably mild, and the side effects are limited. And for most people, you don't lose your hair. But clearly, this is a lot more aggressive. What you went through was a lot more aggressive. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I've had, I think, 10 different types of chemo. And that was by far, you know, the most severe. And they, you know, like I said, it hasn't been approved yet, but we tried it, and it seemed to work. So this next chemo I can be going through is also a clinical trial. It's some of Vidaza mixed in with immunotherapy, and this will tell 2 to 3 hours a day in an IV for 8 straight days. So I will start that on Monday.
Craig, it's Mike Grange here. When we met in Oakland, you know, I was really struck by, you know, how the players in the NBA community really seems to gravitate to you and all the good wishes you get all the time. What's it going to be like for you this weekend? I know you missed All-Star last year because of your illness. How much did you have this event circle on your calendar, and what's it going to mean to you to be back at All-Star, an event I know you really have cherished covering over the years?
Yeah, I don't like to miss any events. You know, whether it's a regular season game or a preseason game, whatever, I always like to be there. And miss All-Star last year was, you know, very hard, but I realized my body couldn't handle it. So I watched it and enjoyed it from afar. But I've been to every one since 1988 covering them. And I really look forward to that. I think it's our marquee event at Turner. It's our chance to showcase what we do best, and that's cover the NBA. We have all weekend is ours. It used to be, you know, several years ago where we didn't get to do the game on Sunday. NBC did, but under the contract we've had lately for the past decade or so, we do the game itself. And so it's really our time, and it's something I look forward to. I get geared up for it. I plan that as if it's, you know, like, I guess it'd be sacrilegious to say Christmas, but as far as the sporting events, you know, I've been to the baseball All-Star games and the Pro Bowls and all that. It's just nothing like NBA All-Star, because you have all the players there, plus they get a chance to shine. You know, as a kid, I went to an All-Star baseball game in Chicago. Ernie Banks was my favorite player, and he only got to bat once. When you go to an NBA All-Star game, you know darn well that ball's going to be in Kobe Bryant's hands for his last, you know, All-Star game, and Steph Curry's going to be hitting threes, and everybody gets a chance to do their thing. So I really look forward to the game itself, and then obviously the slam dunk and three-point contest and the skills. That's probably, you know, equally as attractive as far as, you know, the audience for that three-point contest. And this year, a little something special. I got an 11-year-old daughter named Riley and a 9-year-old son named Ryan, and they've been trying to be ball boy and ball girl for All-Star Weekend for a while, and of course last year I couldn't do it. So they were selected, so they're going to be the ball boy and ball girl on Saturday night. So
oh, great.
Fun for me, and I'll be working alongside of them. I gave them the participants and said, don't let it interfere with your homework, but try to memorize everybody in the competition and what team they're with, and when they want to practice, and make sure you know what you're doing. And you do your job, I'll do mine, and we'll talk about it after the event. So they're all excited.
Is there anything you would change about the All-Star Weekend? there anything?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, people have talked about changing the slam dunk, and, you know, we used to do the old-timers game,
yep,
which turned into a disaster.
Yep.
With torn knees and yep, all the injuries we used to get. So it's been tweaked at different times. It, to the person at home, you know, obviously the game is, it's the showcase and highlights more like a video game, because we know there's not a lot of strategy. But it seems to be what they enjoy and what they like. There's so many other parts of All-Star Weekend, though. You know, all the meetings that they have and all the coaches that are there and all the players and the players' reps. And you get to see so many people in the parties and, you know, even the Rising Stars game. So I don't know. I think it's worked well. There's probably certain things that you could probably tweak. A lot of people want to get rid of that Rising Stars game. But now that we've changed the format, so it's the United States against the world, I think it's add a little more excitement, and the players love to play in it. So right now I'm just happy to be there. I'm not about to make any changes.
Yeah.
And we understand you've been assigned to the Western Conference. So more Greg Popovich, Craig Sager love-ins.
Yeah, I don't know. He may be a little more relaxed now that, you know, the game doesn't mean as much. So I look forward to seeing Pop. I'm glad that they assigned me. I did campaign for the West, but Kobe and obviously the Golden State Warrior trio and all. I think I'd rather cover the West this year.
Craig, don't.
You like the home team.
Yeah. Craig, don't rush up. It's a lot chillier here than it is where you are. If you're here for the game, that's plenty. Thanks a lot for taking a few minutes today. Continued good health. We wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and see you tomorrow.
Craig Sager of the NBA on TNT.
Now, I when I was in, I went to Oakland a couple of weeks ago and did a feature on Steph Curry, and Craig Sager was there because Golden State was playing San Antonio, and it was a TNT game, and so we're waiting to get into the practice. And you know, I was going to introduce myself anyway. I hadn't really had a chance to introduce myself to him before. And I just overhear him say something about him having Seattle Slough's dung shellacked in his basement. It sounds a lot better if you could say it the right way. And, you know, it's just one of those comments. You just, what? And so it turns out, I mean, the thing with Craig Sager is he is more interesting, as much as he's interesting on camera with his suits and his clothes and his, you know, he's more interesting off camera. And so he says he got Seattle Slough's dung because he knew the owner from Fort Myers. This is when in 1977, they say he wants to go to the Belmont to watch him win the Triple Crown. But he doesn't have a room. They say, well, you can come sleep in the barn. So he spends the night before the Belmont in the barn with Seattle Slough. Wake up in the morning, they're cleaning out the barn. He goes and retrieves a sample.
Really?
Takes it home in a bag, shellacks it. He's got it in his basement. Under glass.
Does that appeal to you at all?
Well, he's all, I mean, you know the story about him and Hank Aaron?
Tell us.
So, 1974, April 8th, Hank Aaron is poised to break Babe Ruth's home run record. And he's a reporter in, I think he was in Fort Myers or Sarasota. And he's like, I just got to go. Now, the station won't send him. He's like, forget it. I'm just going to go. Well, you have to be back for morning drive the next morning. You figure out a way. If you're not here, you're fired. He goes, whatever. He goes. And because his request for credentials was late, obviously there was a pack of media following there. He ends up on the third base side. It's a cold, rainy night. He's there by himself, him and a few photographers. All the photographers or anything are on the first base side because they wanted to get the good photo of Hank, mm-hmm, left-handed hitter, right? Right-handed hitter wanted to get the good picture. Hank hits his home run, and if you can see it now on YouTube, Sager jumps over the fence, and he's like runs from third base to home plate with Hank Aaron. There's a crowd gathering. He gets all the audio from Hank Aaron as he crosses the plate. They stop the game. They do a ceremony. He does the mom. He does the players. He does that. If you go to Cooperstown, and you go to there's a display, I guess, commemorating the event. All the audio played on a loop is all his audio gathered by Craig Sager.
Really
amazing. And there's story after story about like that with this guy. Also in his basement, Morgana's bra. How do you get Morgana's bra? Like, it's one after another after another. He's just an incredible figure.
Probably you ask. That's all you probably had to do with Morgana.
Bailed her out of jail, apparently, is the story. But
really?
Yeah. So it's just like on and on. And, you know, and the fact that he's here this weekend is great, given his health considerations, is even more amazing. And anyway, it was a pleasure for me to meet him and obviously to have him on the radio.
Well,
he's more interesting than me, Bob.
I'm not one who collects a lot of sports memorabilia. I have a handful of things, and some of them are, you know, important, and most of them really aren't all that important. It's just never been my thing. I understand it, and I'm okay with it. Just, I'm not that guy. But that is something that wouldn't even occur to me.
George Brett's jock. He also has George Brett's jock.
Again, yeah. These are things that I don't quite understand. Let's take the break. We'll come back with more Primetime. We'll continue on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports.
Minutes before the hour. This is Primetime Coast to Coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. Bob McCowan and Michael Grange in our Toronto studios. Later on, Don Van Natta Jr. of ESPN, and outside the lines, Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet, among others. John Shannon will be in here. This is a very interesting story. One wonders how much power fans actually have. And over the course of the last 40 years or so, I have seen individuals, including my former co-host, try and impact the marketplace by staging some sort of rebellion. The late Jim Hunt decided to walk out of a Blue Jays game, and I don't even remember why, but he was mad about something, and he decided to stage a campaign that we would all walk out before the game started. Well, the only person who walked out was Jim Hunt, and everybody else walked in.
So he missed a good game.
Yeah, he wound up missing a good game and didn't make a point at all. So you get the sense that fans really may not have, probably don't have much leverage at all with the institutions that provide the product that they love to watch. But not so in Liverpool. Carl Markham is with the Press Association and covers the Liverpool sports scene and joins us on the telephone. Carl, good of you to take time for us today. Thank you very much. Why don't you give us the scenario that led up to this fan revolt, if you will, or protest? What exactly took place that inspired the fans to walk out of a game?
Well, it was probably a bit earlier this time last week. Liverpool Football Club announced their annual season ticket and match price ticket prices for next season. And what really sort of hit the headlines was an increase in the season ticket. Anfield was going to see its first £1,000 season ticket, and match tickets were going up to the highest match ticket was going up to £77 from £59. So £77, I think, is about $155 Canadian. The £1,000 season ticket is about $2,000 Canadian, I think, roughly. So quite a big increase, and fans really sort of stuck in the core of a lot of fans thinking that there's a lot of money coming into the Premier League next season. The Premier League clubs will start sharing an £8 billion television deal.
Right.
So their argument was, if you're getting all this money in, why are we then being asked to spend more money on tickets just to come and say see exactly the same product as we're seeing this season? So what happened as a result of that, the 77 figure became sort of a rallying point, and two fans groups decided they were going to make a stand. So within 24 hours, 48 hours of these ticket prices coming out, the fans groups announced that they were going to try and stage this protest where they were going to try and get people to walk out in the 77th minute to coincide with the price of the most expensive ticket. Using social media effectively, they got approximately about 10,000 people to get out of their seats and leave the game while it was still in progress. I mean, 10,000, that's nearly a quarter of Anfield's capacity at the moment. So quite a considerable thing to be able to mobilise in such a short space of time. But it was an issue that really, really sort of, yeah, was a one that the fans wanted to tackle head on.
Were either John Henry, the principal owner, or Tom Werner in attendance at the game to see this?
Oh, no, we hardly ever see John at all. He makes possibly two, maybe three trips over every season. Tom is a bit more of a regular visitor, but he's Liverpool chairman, so he's a little bit more hands-on. But no, neither of them were there to see this. But what did echo across the Atlantic was the sight of these television pictures of fans leaving the ground. I mean, it wasn't broadcast. It was a 3 o'clock kickoff in the UK, so it wasn't broadcast live in the UK. But obviously, around the rest of the world, Liverpool are one of the biggest TV draws still. So this was broadcast to millions of people across the world, and there was thousands of people getting out of their seat. There were chants about the owners calling them greedy. And then once they finished this chant, they just got up and left. And I think the owners were quite surprised by the actions of the supporters and how many had responded to this. And as quickly as Sunday, they were making calls back to their executives in Liverpool saying, "I think we've got this wrong. We need to do something about it." And I say the turnaround has been remarkable within a week. And I say the prices were announced last week. They made this decision to review the particular prices on Sunday, and by last night we had a complete U-turn in terms of what they were proposing, and they're now saying that they're going to freeze season ticket and match ticket prices for the next 2 years.
Carl, why did they think this could work? Maybe being here in North America, we're just sort of Pavlovian, right? Like, we're just used to paying too much for our sports. And why would
Teams here raise ticket prices on an annual basis, and everybody kind of grumbles a bit, but they shrug their shoulders and they write a bigger check,
or they don't go. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that happens. And so why did maybe just explain that dynamic a little bit, where a fans would feel they could A, take offence, and B, have a voice?
Well, there's been a movement in the UK for the last two or three years among fans groups around the country trying to push an initiative called 20 is Plenty, which is to ask every Premier League club to cap away tickets at £20. So wherever you went to a ground as a travelling supporter, as an away supporter, you would only pay £20. And this initiative has been sort of the gathering momentum among fans, because the variety of prices you pay. I mean, you can go to some of the lower end teams and pay £25 to get in, and you go to the likes of especially London clubs, Arsenal and Chelsea, and you can pay £55-60. And they said it was unfair when you take into account the amount of costs and global travelling and everything else. They wanted a league-wide agreement on this cap. And they haven't been able to do it. There have been some reciprocal arrangements between clubs, where one club says, "Well, we'll subsidise our away tickets for your match if you subsidise them for our match." But that was the basis of the campaign.
Right.
But Liverpool fans in particular have a recent history of mobilising when they feel like there's been injustice being done. I mean, you're probably aware of the trouble of the former American owners, George Gillette, who'll be familiar to you, with the Montreal Canadiens, and Tom Hicks. They had a real battle on their hands when Liverpool fans decided that they didn't like the way the club was being run and the way it was being put into debt by their leverage buyout, and the Liberal fund then mobilised this very vociferous campaign against the owners, which effectively didn't force them out because their financial troubles helped force them out, but there was definitely a PR campaign against them, which was very effective. And I just wonder whether John Henry and Tom Renner have sort of had that in the back of their mind.
Well, that's exactly, you read my mind. That was my next question in reference to Gillette and Hicks. Whether Werner and Henry looked at what was happening now and said, you know, we don't, as the next American owners of the Liverpool franchise, we don't want to be cast in the same light as George and Tom were. We better make some changes here. Do you think that's possible or even likely?
I don't think we can discount it. I mean, they released a very long open letter to fans yesterday when they're announcing the U-turn. And one of them, part of that said that they were particularly troubled by the perception that they don't care about supporters, that they are greedy, and they were attempting to extract personal profits at the club's expense. Now, they went on to point out that they'd never taken any money out of the club themselves, and they've put money in. But that one about not, you know, one being greedy, not attempting to extract personal profit, does seem to sort of, you know, sort of suggest that they had that sort of that scenario in mind when they were making this decision.
Right.
They, and that, the last thing they wanted to do was to be sort of compared to that regime, because the relationship they had with the Hicks and Gillette had with Liverpool fans was so toxic in the end that it was unbearable. So I think that would have had some bearing, and also it was just so bad PR. I mean, the ticket prices, the price increases they were involving would have brought in an extra £2 million next year, and when you consider that the team that finishes bottom of the Premier League next season will get the same amount of money in the new TV deal as the winners of the Premier League will get this season, you can see sort of the vast amount of wealth that's,
right,
that's now coming into the Premier League. So £2 million was nothing for these increases. So it was a massive PR failure, I think, on their part to think they could push this through for the sake of £2 million and hope that, you know, they wouldn't get a backlash, because Liverpool fans just won't stand for it.
Clearly. Well, power to the people. You don't get these stories very often where the fans get to rise up, at least in some kind of even peaceful protest, and the owners pay attention. But good for Liverpool. Thank you, Carl, for taking time for us tonight. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Carl Markham is with Press Association, or the Press Association, and covers the Liverpool soccer scene. It's interesting you mentioned Gillette and Hicks, because I thought that immediately. I thought, you know, that the Liverpool fans are probably emboldened by the belief that they managed to get rid of Gillette and Hicks.
They've been heard once and they'll be heard again type thing.
Yeah, if we yell and scream loud enough, maybe something will happen. And now, damn if it hasn't. Not only have they rolled back the tickets to the previous level, they've actually lowered the ticket prices. So their success is even beyond their own aspirations. The thing that I think you have to worry about is what might they protest next?
it's a little bit of a slippery slope, but it's just funny to hear through North American ears. The prices don't seem that crazy, right? Season ticket, I mean, I guess you're probably getting about 18 games, I think. The Premier League season's,
well, I don't
35,
know.
36 games.
No, the Premier League is 36, I think.
Right.
Isn't it? So you get 18 home, 18 right, away. But then you have, FA Cup games, and you have...
Yeah, I don't know if that's extra or what.
I don't know.
Who knows? But let's just presume if it's just for Premier League games, well, you know, your season ticket holder, season ticket number is £870, so they call that 2,000 Canadian. It's maybe a bit more, but it seems like a pretty good deal. $120, go see, you know, one of the great franchises in the world. There's a lot of people who line up the ACC for that deal.
No, but I mean, I guess it's like anything. It depends on what the market will bear. I mean, the National Basketball Association is about to get really rich with a new television deal. I don't see them giving back any money to the fans.
No, but
I haven't seen the Raptors hold a news conference, or Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment hold a news conference and said, well, since we're getting these...
here's your cut.
Yeah, here's your piece of it. We're not going to raise ticket prices. We're going to cut ticket prices back.
Now, I don't ever expect this to happen, but it is a little bit interesting in that, you know, how exciting is a sports event on TV when there's no one in the arena or in the stands? Like, that's part of the furniture. That's part of the you can feel it coming through your set. And, you know, and as the more and more revenue comes from other sources than the paying customer, you wonder if fans need to think, franchises, leagues need to think a little bit differently because...
Nah. We'd like it, but do they have to? Nah. I mean, they operate on the basis of we're going to raise the ticket prices and keep raising the ticket prices until people stop coming.
Yeah.
Until the tickets stop being sold.
Right. But I mean, what I'm saying is here's an example of a fan group that said, you know what? We won't come. You need us more than we need you. And you know, it's obviously...
Well, there's no historical precedent for it, I don't think.
I think the supporter group experience in the UK and around soccer is much different than it is around these professional
and
franchises.
And let's be honest,
here,
too. About a quarter of the people walked out, which means about three quarters didn't. I don't know what that means, but do you think Henry and Werner take this action if they are not aware of the Gillette Hicks debacle?
Yeah.
Remember, I mean, Liverpool, the last thing Liverpool wanted was they didn't like American owners. So they get rid of these American owners who they didn't like, mostly Hicks. And they're replaced by more American owners. I think our friends, you know, at Fenway were well aware of the ground that they were walking into. And as soon as there was any kind of pushback, I think they got scared. And they acted initially like typical greedy American sports owners. Like this company.
You never know. Maybe they're doing the math and going, why at Fenway Park do we charge this much for a ticket? And why at Anfield do we charge this much? Let's get this more.
Well, I don't know if it's even that comparative. It's if you're selling all the tickets, you're certainly not lowering prices. You know, and in a business, and I understand it, in a business, no matter what you're selling, selling apples. You sell all your apples 1 year, you come back the next year and say, well, let's charge 5 cents an apple more. Right.
But we can
make more money off this.
But it's a little bit like, and again, this is fantasy type stuff, but there was a day, right, where the athletes, you know, they wouldn't say boo in a contract negotiation. Whatever you want to pay me, throw in a jacket, says Gordie Howe, great.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
a change in the 70s,
you know, over
right?
time and across all the sports, there was a recognition of if we act collectively, we have a big stake here, and they've been heard and paid since. So the fans are the only element in this equation that don't act collectively.
Before all the soccer people go crazy, my math was a little off. They play 38 games, 19 at home. And I should know that because there are 20 teams in the Premiership, and you play each of them twice.
One of which is Spurs.
Yes, who are in second place last time I looked. Yeah, so 20 teams, and you play each team home and away once each. So that's 19 teams times 2 is 38.
Right.
I don't know why I didn't figure that out.
It's not 40 games.
No, that would then you'd have to play yourself home and away. Don't think that would work. Thank you, Mr. Grange, for stopping by. We will
My pleasure.
We will see you soon. Will we see you tomorrow? Are you joining us tomorrow?
No, I think I
Oh, you have NBA stuff.
Other NBA things, yes.
When we come back, John Shannon will wander in here. Terrell Owens will not. In spite of the fact I'm told he did some interview with a CTV television news channel earlier today, apparently his schedule permitted that. I'm not at all disappointed. I'm intrigued, in fact, to find out who the producers will scramble to bring in his stead. Don Van Natta Jr. of ESPN and Outside the Lines, he wrote an extensive piece on all the behind-the-scenes stuff that happened in the NFL's attempt to go back to L.A., That story may not be done yet, but there's lots of interesting stuff to address. We'll do that with him, and Glenn Healy will join us as well. That and more coming up when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.